This summer, click into cordless power with Memorial Day savings at the Home Depot. Tackle more than half an acre of grass with the convenience and gas-like power of the Ryobi 40-volt battery-powered mower. And keep your flower beds looking fresh with the 40-volt cordless string trimmer. Then clear leaves and debris with the 40-volt leaf blower. No cords, no gas, no hassle. Click into Memorial Day savings happening now at the Home Depot and on homedepot.com. How doers get more done.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X, celebrating pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women, creating sustainable size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies, so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection, obsessively fit tested for all day comfort in sizes 3 extra small through 6X. Visit tomboyx.com.
I'm going out with the girls this weekend. Nails done, outfit stunner, and my skin? I know it's going to be glowing because I glammed up my shower routine with new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash. It smells so luxurious and deeply moisturizes with its super rich, creamy lather that's bursting with vitamin B3 complex. So my skin glows and my confidence grows. Try new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash for glowing skin in just 14 days.
On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked, if movies have women in them, are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast, start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Hello and welcome to the Bechdel cast. My name is Caitlin Durante.
And I'm Jamie Loftus.
And we talk about the portrayal of women in movies.
In life, but mostly on this podcast. Actually, that's maybe it's an even split at this point.
Yeah, we're always texting each other, being like, hey, did you see this movie? What'd you think about
it? Yeah. And usually I'm like, I didn't see it. And then you're like, okay, let's hang out.
Yeah.
That's fun. That's a nice little friendship.
Yeah, it's really, really wonderful.
That's good. So we use the Bechdel test, a test invented by cartoonist Alison Bechdel. So we use the Bechdel test as a jumping off point to take a look at some of your favorite movies. Our definition of that is a scene in a piece of media must include two female identifying characters with names who talk about something other than a man for more than two lines of dialogue. Mm-hmm. You think it would be easy.
You would think.
And yet... You know what would be interesting is to, like, crunch, like, one of those AFI lists or something and figure out how many of those movies actually
It's, like, 20% or less.
That seems reasonable.
Yeah.
I also – there was something someone tweeted us this morning, and then we'll get into the episode, I promise. But someone had just listened to our Bend It Like Beckham episode, and they tweeted this stray thought that's really been haunting me.
Ooh.
Which is, like,
well, – what a season to be feeling haunted.
Yeah, I've got a segue in mind.
Okay.
But he tweeted at us that he could think off the top of his head more sports movies that starred animals than starred human women.
Yeah. Oh, I think we talk about that in that episode.
Maybe he's just quoting us. Maybe we're geniuses. But I was like, oh my God, he's so smart. Maybe we're so smart.
Right. Remember, because we talked about, like, Air Bud and then various Air Bud spinoffs.
My favorite, MVP, Most Valuable Primate.
Yes.
The hockey movie. I love that one. Uh-huh. Oh, God. You say that and then you're like, but I do want to see a monkey play a goalie. So I guess we just need more movies with women and more movies with animals and less movies with men. That's what I meant.
True. Yes.
And, anyways.
And speaking of, being horrified at the representation of
you.
Women
yes.
in film.
Yeah. Where you go with this?
Oh, let's go shopping is what I was going to suggest.
Women be shopping.
Yeah. So, yes, let us talk about the movie we're here to talk about today. But first, why don't we introduce our guest?
Yes.
She is a writer on Thundercats Roar on Cartoon Network, also a writer on Yabba Dabba Dinosaurs on Boomerang, and performs regularly at UCB LA. Joan Ford.
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me.
Hi, Joan.
I should say next year. All those shows will be out next year.
Yeah, so be on the lookout.
Look out. Don't stop looking out.
Never stop.
Have your TV tuned to Cartoon Network 24/7.
Keep your eyes peeled.
Stay in your perch.
Yes.
Your little crow's nest, Titanic.
Yes.
Keep your eyes on the horizon for new media.
My mom always used to say to me when I was younger to be alert and aware, which I think both applies to, you know,
cartoon shows that cartoon I wrote shows. On specifically.
And
yes. The year 2019.
Yes, yes. Only then.
But she was also like, you know, stay safe, be aware of your surroundings and be alert, which applies to horror movies too.
I agree, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You're like, you've got 19 different segues locked and loaded today.
It's my segue of life.
Yeah, you're like Paul Blart because you love segues.
Oh, that got me good. Okay. They should come up with a new Paul Blart where he gets into birds.
Yeah.
Oh, God. The pratfalls Paul Blart would do off a bird scooter, I tell you.
Yeah.
Not to encourage more movies starring Kevin James.
Right.
Although.
Maybe it's time for, like, a female Paul Blart. Maybe it's time to gender swap
where
that franchise.
Is
all female
Paula Blart.
Paul Blart, yes.
Kind of unbelievable.
Yeah,
though, that
we're the first person to think of that.
I feel like a high school that's already was like a high schooler's YouTube video.
Yeah.
What if Paula Blart?
Yeah.
And so wait, what's the movie today?
Well, speaking of strong female protagonists, we're talking about Scream. The first one, directed by Wes Anderson from 1996.
Wes
Anderson.
That is, someone has made that YouTube video, Wes Anderson Scream.
Wes Anderson Scream.
Just a lot of very center of frame murders and phone calls.
Yeah.
Really, I'm literally looking at the name Craven right in front of me, and I still said Wes Anderson.
It's okay.
To be fair, it's a silly last name.
Yeah, that a horror master should be so Craven.
There was already a fake trailer of Paula Blart released where Melissa McCarthy, you know, someone got there.
We're behind the times.
McCarthy was a pass, if you can believe.
Okay, so what we are talking about is Scream, directed by Wes Craven.
Craven.
Joan, what is your history, your relationship with this movie?
Oh my gosh. Well, I hate talking about this because I'm going to date myself, but I was very much like the target audience for this movie when it came out. Mm-hmm. This actually came out on like the weekend of my like 16th birthday.
Ooh.
Oh my God.
Okay, so can I take us all back to like winter of 1996? Yes. So I don't know if like people realize this now, especially if they like kind of like came up like after the movie, but like it wasn't just that like Scream was like not expected to do well. It was like expected to like bomb.
Oh.
Like they buried that movie because that winter, like it came out the same weekend that like all these big Christmas movies came out, like Mars Attacks and Jerry Maguire and Beavis and Butthead Do America. And like all those movies were just going to like bury Scream. Mm. In fact, I remember it didn't even come to like the main theater in my town. It opened in the like $3 cheapy theater because they just expected a bomb. And I was like a big horror nerd and I was really excited to see it. But like just I remember that like it opening and no one really thinking of it. And then it kind of like slowly like picked up steam to the point that it
picked
got
up
moved.
Scream.
Picked
Sorry,
up Scream.
I just can't stop today.
It got moved over. Eventually got moved over to the big theater. And that like holiday break, moving into that like first couple weeks of January in school, like it became this thing that everybody was talking about. Everybody was going to see. And like all of a sudden, it was cool to like be into horror. And like
that
was
so cool.
It was this very fun like communal thing where like everybody like I went to see it a couple times in theaters, and like you would always run into people you kind of knew. So yeah, it was just like it was fun, and it made me feel like, oh, something I like is cool now. Because like I said, you know, I was like a kid who grew up like reading Fangoria and like writing letters to like horror directors. so yeah, it made me feel like it gave me a little bit of a community. And like for the rest of my high school, I had like horror friends because of that. Like I remember going to see Bride of Chucky with the cool kids after that. Yeah.
Because the cool kids were seeing Bride of Chucky.
Yeah, Scream made it okay to go see Bride of Chucky.
That's excellent. I was also, like you were saying, I was really surprised to see this movie came out during, like, the Christmas season, because you would think it would be for sure in October release. Yeah. Like, that's so, you can't kill Scream. You can't. And I would say if I was looking at and knew nothing about this movie and I hadn't already heard so many amazing things about it, if I saw the villain, I'd be like, probably this movie sucks. If I saw it, like, the mask, I'd be like, this is a goof.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This is a goofy one. But my history with this movie is, of course, I watched it this morning.
Yes.
And before that, I knew I loved Matthew Lillard. And I was like, let's roll the dice as Lillard's number one fan. Because I'll watch any Lillard joint. And I will say, spoilers for everyone listening. I was telling Caitlin when I got in today that, you know, like, for me, it seemed so clear because Lillard did not die right away because he's such a doofus that he was involved. Because when when it gets to be the 45-minute mark, you're like, Lillard's still alive? Here?
Yeah.
What is he? So anyways, and Lillard and Neve Campbell were dating on the set of Scream.
Wait, what?
That's,
I know.
I hate that.
I hate it too. I mean, Lillard, what a lucky guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What a reach. But you know.
Yeah.
He went for it and it worked out.
Good for him, I guess. Is this the set that Courtney Cox and David Arquette meet on?
I believe so. Yeah.
Ooh! Wow. Yeah. This is a hot set.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone's fucking.
A lot of momentary hiccups.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So my history with this movie is I did not see any of the movies in the Scream franchise until I think 2011 before the fourth one came out. So my friend JT, friend of the cast, Twilight episode, is a big Scream head. And he was like, look, we're going to go see Scream 4 and you have to prepare. So we like sat down and had a little Scream marathon. So I didn't watch any of them until then. And I was like, these are fun. This is great. Mm-hmm. And then I just rewatched all four again in preparation of this episode. And I like these movies even more now. I'm like, these are so freaking fun.
They're so fun.
They are fun.
Yeah. There's still stuff to talk about. But
my first horror franchise or slashy franchise that I really loved was Final Destination.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm pretty sure Final Destination came out on the success of movies like Scream, right? That's post-Scream,
I believe. I think that, I want to say that was 99 or 2000.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's that whole way, like, horror was really kind of like dead as a genre before Scream. Like there was this, like after kind of like the early 90s, horror kind of went away after like the like Jason, Freddy, Chucky boom. Yeah, like everyone thought horror was dead. Even like Wes Craven was coming off of like a string of flops. That's why everyone's so surprised when Scream hit so big.
People were ready.
Yeah. Oh. They were ready for horror to be reinvented.
Did you see all the, I'm going to just keep bringing up Matthew Lillard, this whole thing. Did you see the Matthew Lillard cameos in Screams 2 and 4?
I did see that on IMDb. Yes, I did.
I don't know about this. Yeah. Where do I look to see Matthew Lillard in Screams 2 and 4?
Crowd scenes, it seems like.
Okay.
He's just available is the point. Yeah. Scream 2, the only thing that Matthew Lillard did in the year 1997, he played Guy at Party uncredited. go forward a little bit to Scream 4, Guy at Stabathon. Uncredited.
Okay.
So, you know, he's now Lillard as the only person I think in the world living solely on a Scooby-Doo based income.
Yeah.
you know, I think, you know, he's just around.
Yeah.
He's got the time.
He was good in the Twin Peaks revival.
He was in the Twin Peaks revival.
Yeah. I was like, I'm feeling something from Matthew Lillard. I don't know if I like that. I'm empathizing with him. That's not good.
Right, that is something, like, maybe it's time to go on vacation.
Maybe I'm a sociopath. That's what,
I remember when he was on The Good Wife, I lost my mind. Anyways.
That's right. Oh, my God.
He was on The Good Wife. He was great.
Yeah, he is good.
Okay. Oof. So now, one last thing I wanted to say is, while it took me a while to see the Scream movies, I did see all of the Scary Movie movies.
Mm. As they were coming out?
So the first Scary Movie is closely a parody of the first Scream movie. And I also rewatched like the first half of that also to prepare for this episode just because, you know, just in case something came up. And it is the worst movie in the world. It's like the jokes that it relies on are just a series of the most problematic jokes in the world. It's just, it's trash. It's horrible. But I did see those and was familiar with that. So I sort of watched Scream before I actually saw Scream.
Yeah, you got the narrative of Scream before you saw Scream. Because it is like, that is from just this generation of parody movies where it's like, you don't build another story. You're just like, let's tell the other story this movie already did.
Right.
But with more homophobic jokes.
Exactly.
It's so, those movies are so bizarre. Yeah, because there's no attempt at commentary on anything. They're like, hey, look at.
Let's just beat up a woman in every scene. That's funny.
What if they did this in the movie you liked?
What if Juno got eaten by Alvin and the Chipmunks?
Oh my God, wait.
I forget which one. In one of those movies.
No.
They're all a blur, but there's definitely like one where Alvin and the Chipmunks turn into zombies because it was probably also around like Dawn of the Dead time, and they eat Juno.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
That's very late odds upsetting.
There is a great video of Ellen Page watching that scene and like losing her fucking mind. It's very fun.
So shall I do the recap?
Yes.
Okay, so Scream, we open on a teenager named Casey Becker, played by
Drew
Barrymore.
Middle part Drew.
Who was originally going to play Sydney.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, but then scheduling conflicts didn't allow it. Uh-huh. So she took the smaller role, but I think that was actually better for her.
I agree.
It was great. I assumed when I saw that scene, I was like, oh, they could only get Drew for 3 days.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, that's right. She like was an early champion of the script. She wanted to do it.
So she's at home. She's getting ready to watch a scary movie, and then she gets a phone call from an unknown caller who is asking her about scary movies, and the situation escalates. He's like harassing her. This masked figure shows up and ends up killing her and her boyfriend Steve.
Poor. Jock Steve.
Yeah, he's a big guy, but not big enough.
Not big enough to not get murdered.
No.
And then we meet Sydney Prescott. That is Neve Campbell's character. And she's a classmate of Casey's. And then we meet a couple of Sydney's friends. Among them are her boyfriend, Billy, played by Skeet Ulrich.
Or Skeet Ulrich. Rears his little head again. Mm-hmm. Skeet's back on the cast.
Yep.
What was the last thing he was in?
He was in, well, we've done
The Craft.
The Craft.
Oh, okay.
So that was our last Skeet discussion. Every October, Skeet comes
Skeet.
Up.
Yes. Skeetoberfest.
We meet her friend Tatum, played by Rose McGowan. Mm-hmm. Tatum's boyfriend, Stu, which is Lillard. Mm-hmm. And then their other friend, Randy. News of Casey's murder gets spread around. And we also learn that Sydney's mom was murdered a year earlier.
Also, Billy and Lillard did it. But in the first scene, you're like, Lillard's not showing really any empathy towards anyone. I'm like, he's the obvious choice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was onto him from moment one. Where he was like, yeah, I hooked up with that woman who just died brutally a couple times. I don't freaking care. And they're like, what's your alibi, dude? And he's like, I was fucking. I was like, are you serious right now, Lillard? Such poor taste.
Yeah.
Someone's been murdered.
Yeah.
Lillard. Okay. So then we meet a cop, a sheriff's deputy named Dewey, played by David Arquette, and he's also Tatum's brother. He's investigating, and then there's a nosy reporter, Gail Weathers. That's Courtney Cox's character. She's trying to get the scoop on this story.
So many good outfits.
This has the best name characters in any like horror franchise. I think 90% of the reason I remember is like I will remember the names Sydney Prescott, Gail Weathers, and like Cotton Weary to like the day I die. They're just such great like horror movie names.
Cotton Weary is the most insane name, and I love it.
Also, such an insane character.
Yes.
Like it's like you're supposed to care about this guy you never see once in the actual movie.
But he plays a much more prominent role in Scream 2.
Yes.
Oh, I was told skip 2, see 3.
Oh, I disagree. I think 2 is more fun than 3.
Yeah. Wow.
And Scream 4 is also a romp. Yeah. So
it depends on where
just watch them all.
Yeah.
All right.
Depends
good.
On where you stand on Jay and Silent Bob cameos.
Oh, right.
Oh, God. I mean, well, I was able to weather them in Degrassi, but they took over a season of Degrassi.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Oh, it was a nightmare. It was a nightmare.
Yeah. Apparently, Kevin Smith wanted to direct some episodes, but they're like, you can't because you're not Canadian. He's like, well, okay, can I just like star in an entire arc? And they let him do that.
Right. And there's still like all the teenage stuff. Like, there's still like girls struggling like with their teen pregnancies, but also Jay and Silent Bob are there. It's very weird.
Huh. All right, Kevin.
Kevin?
Kevin.
Okay.
Lord.
So then Sydney gets a call from the killer, and he is threatening her.
Mr. Scream.
Mr. Scream.
Yes.
And a moment later, her boyfriend Billy shows up, and a cell phone drops out of his pocket. Oh, it's also worth noting that Sydney is a virgin. She is dealing with the grief and trauma of her mom dying.
She has an underpants rule.
She has an underpants role. Billy's like, come on, do some sex stuff with me. And she's like, no, you know about my rule. And he's like, okay.
Rats.
Yeah. Doe. So Billy shows up right after she gets this call and a cell phone drops out of his pocket. And it seems like maybe he's the killer. So she's like, oh, no. And he gets arrested.
Because this was a period of time when you having a cell phone and the killer having a cell phone was enough evidence to like, be like, oh, they both have cell phones.
We don't know many people with cell phones.
He must be the killer. She turns on him so fast. She's like, cell phone, you're the murderer.
Right. And that like kept me off Billy's trail for a while. Yeah. It's like she is jumping, loyal to no
one.
Yeah,
she's jumping to conclusions so fast.
Imagine being a teenager and being like, no, arrest my boyfriend for having a cell phone.
Except in this movie, they call them cellulars.
Yeah.
It's just like you hear the word cellular like 18 different times.
Do you ever call it a celly when you're younger?
No. I remember that. Yeah.
Like, call me celly.
Call me celly.
But I only have 12 minutes, so make it quick.
Right.
God. Yeah, you just be cut off in the middle of a brilliant thought on your celly.
So Billy's in jail, but Sydney gets another call from the killer, so it can't be Billy.
Mr. Scream again.
Mr. Scream calls, and he's like, you got the wrong guy. And then we learn Sydney had testified against this guy, Cotton Weary, who was convicted of killing Sydney's mom. And then Gail's snooping around. She's trying to get her story. And Sydney.
Hair outfits.
Yes.
Beautiful, lots of
like streaky like blonde highlights.
The local news look is on full display. Yeah.
And Sydney hates Gail for like exploiting her mom's murder for a like book deal.
Yeah.
And you know, Gail, she's trying to get closer to Dewey to like get information, and you know, they're like
and you're like giving some cutie eyes out there.
Also important to note, I think, is that like she doesn't think Cotton did it. She thinks he's been falsely identified. And Sydney sent an innocent man to jail.
Right.
Which we maybe have seen her do twice now.
Right.
That's
so
true.
Yeah. And maybe Gail's onto something.
Yeah.
So then the principal of their school gets murdered and people are speculating who the killer might be. And Randy, their friend, is this like horror movie buff, and he's like, you know, it's got to be
which
this.
Which we should
this
say, by the way, King Jamie Kennedy.
That's Jamie Kennedy?
Yeah.
What? Yes. How did I not know that?
If Lillard weren't already in this movie, that would be my central focus.
Yeah.
But it is Jamie Kennedy of the experiment.
Yes. And your arch nemesis.
My arch nemesis. I'm going to marry into the Kennedys. So then I'll be the Jamie Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, Jamie Kennedy.
Okay, good to know.
Oh, stars are out in this movie.
So then the police trace the calls that were made from the killer to Sydney's dad's cellular, and they can't find him. So they're like, oh no, Sydney's dad is the killer. Mm-hmm. And then Stu throws a party. Some people get killed, including Tatum, in the garage door in a very brutal scene.
Never go to Lillard's house.
Yeah. Also, very strong garage door. Like, I feel like every garage door I've ever seen, like, breaks at, like, the drop of a pin. And it's just able to, like, lift a full person,
and
like,
mash her head into.
Yeah.
Also, like, my garage door is A, weak, but also it has enough of a sensor that it would just be like, it would start to slowly rise up.
Yeah.
Also, oh, well.
Little tidbit that I like is that apparently I think they did need a stunt double because, like, Rose McGowan was actually thin enough that she could get through the doggy door.
God.
So the rest of the story, they're at Stu's party. People are getting killed. Billy and Sydney finally have sex. And then afterwards, she's like, wait a minute, I think you still might be the killer. And he's like, what do I have to do to prove that I'm not? And then he gets stabbed by the killer. And then the killer is going after Sydney and then more people.
This is such a high-level prank at this point. I'm like, you're getting stabbed over your own weird... What?
Because moments later, we find out that it was just, the blood that we see was just corn syrup.
The same as using Carrie.
Mm-hmm. And he is in on it. So the killers are revealed to be Stu and Billy.
Lillard, I like, he never has narrative consequence.
Right,
I know. I was like, probably a big day for him.
Yeah.
All right, well.
So- So they're like telling their whole plan and the whole, you know, backstory to Sydney. And they're the ones who killed her mom. It wasn't Cotton Weary after all.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they plan to kill her and frame her dad. But then she's like, no, not on my watch. And she throws a TV onto Stu's head. Yeah. And then Gail comes in and shoots Billy.
Goodbye, also, Skeet.
Goodbye, Skeet. Something that always bothered me about the ending is that, like, an important part of Skeet and Lillard's plan is that they're going to, like, stab each other to, like, make themselves look like victims. But they do that in the middle of the plan, and it's like, wait until, like, you've gotten everything else done, then stab each other. Don't do it, like, that's not step, like, two. That's step, like, 10.
Last.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why, maybe, like, they're not so bright.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, if only they could do a second pass at that plan.
Yeah. They should have workshopped it.
Yeah, they should have taken it to, they should have gone to a local jail, ran it by an actual murderer, be like, so if you could do it over and get away with it, what would you do different?
Yeah.
Because, like most murders involve you stabbing yourself. To look like a victim.
Do your homework.
Yeah.
And then there's, you know, a running theme throughout the movie because they're watching Halloween and the different things that are happening in slasher movies are sort of informing what's... So the two bad guys die at the end. Sydney emerges triumphant. Mm-hmm. And that is the end of the movie. So let's take a quick break and then we'll come right back.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X, celebrating pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women, creating sustainable size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection, obsessively fit tested for all day comfort in sizes 3 extra small through 6X. Visit TomboyX.com.
I'm going out with the girls this weekend. Nails done. Outfit stunner. And my skin? I know it's going to be glowing because I glammed up my shower routine with new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash. It smells so luxurious and deeply moisturizes with its super rich, creamy lather that's bursting with vitamin B3 complex. So my skin glows and my confidence grows. Try new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash for glowing skin in just 14 days.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. When Dr. Sabah and I decided to do a skincare line together, he said to me, we are going to give women meaningful beauty. And I said, that's exactly right. We want to give women meaningful beauty, which means each and every product is meaningful. It has a reason to exist. It's efficacious. You're going to get results. And then you just go out and live your life.
Meaningful Beauty. Confidence is beautiful. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
All right, we're back. Matt, sorry for the break took so long. I was waiting for Matthew Lillard. He's my assistant now.
Oh, yeah.
And I was waiting for him to bring me my soup. Mm-hmm. And I was on the phone. You heard me screaming, Lillard, where's my soup? This is a joke that's just for me, and I enjoy it. Anyways, Scream, welcome back.
Here we are. Yeah, as we mentioned, this is like a super meta slasher movie that spends a lot of time like calling attention to the tropes of popular horror movies, and like the characters of Scream keep alluding to the fact that their situation is just like a horror movie. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And then, like, as the Scream sequels go, this happens more and more. They get even more meta. There's even more references.
They're making movies about the events of the first movie.
Yeah.
And, like, everybody from the first movie is brought on as a creative consultant.
Yeah.
It seems like in general, and I'm not like a horror buff, I've seen just the basics, mm-hmm. but it seems like it's a very self-referential genre in general, where like this movie, and we just recorded our Halloween episode yesterday, mm-hmm. this movie clearly pulls from Halloween very heavily, but even in Halloween in the late 70s, they're watching horror movies from like the 40s and 50s.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think it helps to acknowledge that you have horror movies taking place in a world where people know horror movie conventions.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I think I especially liked it in Scream because it's all over the place.
Right. For example, one of the things that happens is that the movie calls attention to different, like, kind of frustrating choices the characters will make in horror movies, where in the beginning, I think Sydney is talking on the phone to the killer, and she's like, I don't watch scary movies. It's all the same thing. Some stupid killer is stalking a big-breasted girl who can't act, who is always running up the stairs when she should be running out the front door. And then moments later, circumstances...
Going up those stairs.
Yeah. She runs up the stairs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's, like, clever, funny things like that I enjoy. And then, like, the Randy character, who is a horror buff, is like always rattling off, like, these are the rules, like, here are the tropes, like, da da da.
Even at the beginning, I think, like, Drew Barrymore has that line about, you know, it's always, they're always casting people who are way too old for these parts, and the joke is that Drew Barrymore is, like, way too old for this part. But right. She was only 21 at the time.
Oh.
Yeah. Like,
they styled her to look older.
Yeah, I think they styled. But, like, it's like, God damn it. Like, Matthew Broderick got to play Ferris Bueller when he was 24. I don't think, like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird because there's sometimes when movies are too referential, that rubs me the wrong way. And then you get into, like, Shrek territory of, like, so referencey that without the references, there is no substance. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I think this movie toes that line very well.
Yeah. I find, like, a little distracting at the beginning when it's, like, everybody's talking in movie metaphors. It's like the cool boyfriend is like, our relationship's a PG-13. I don't want to take it
to an R.
And it's like,
so cheesy.
It's also, he says, our relationship was an R and I want to take an NC-17. But it's like, what's not happening in an R-rated movie that I'm pretty sure you can have sex in an R-rated movie.
Right. I'm like, you just want to do some freaky shit? Yeah. Like, what, is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Some like Italian museum fucking movie. I can't, there is a Italian movie where NC-17 where they fuck a museum. I can't remember what it's called.
Oh, I would like to know the name of that movie.
Yeah.
And then what he's like, oh, we can't be. Now it's like edited for CBS on a Tuesday at 7. I was like, whoa, you're 17.
And then at the end, Neve Campbell is like, would you settle for a PG-13 rating? And he's like, what's that? And she flashes them. And it's like, you can't show breasts in a PG-13 movie. They're all over the place on their ratings.
Clearly, you've never seen Titanic, which.
That's artful.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can get away with it if it's artful.
It's oil painting. Breasts.
Yeah.
Right. So many rules.
So in the movie, there's direct references to Halloween. For example, Drew Barrymore's character mentions that Halloween is her favorite scary movie. Mm-hmm. Whenever the parents show up to that house and they're finding that, you know, something is amiss, her dad is like, go to the McKenzie's house and call the police. That's the same family that Laurie Strode in Halloween tells the kids to go to.
Oh, no. And then there's that scene where Skeet and Neve Campbell are making out. That Blue Oyster Cult song from Halloween is playing, too.
Oh, yeah.
Don't Fear the Reaper. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Billy's last name is Loomis, and Loomis is the last name of the psychiatrist in Halloween.
I love that. So Rose
Tatum comments, this is just like a Wes Carpenter film, which is fun mashup of Wes Craven and John Carpenter.
What she meant was Wes Anderson.
Yes, exactly.
Of course. And then later in the movie, they are watching Halloween and kind of picking apart the different tropes. So I just kind of wanted to do a little compare and contrast of the two movies, especially because we just covered Halloween.
A little exercise for the gals.
So like in the Halloween episode, we kind of broke down, okay, here are the women who are being attacked and brutalized versus like not nearly as many men. However, in Scream, we see still a lot of women get attacked and killed, but so do way more men.
I feel like, it's like more than parody in that.
Yeah,
right?
I would say it's about split down the middle because we see Casey Becker get chased, stabbed, and then gutted.
But Steve.
And then Steve, her boyfriend, also is gutted. We see Sydney get attacked multiple times. We see Tatum get killed by the garage door. But we see Dewey, he gets stabbed in the back toward the end.
Yep.
Kenny, the camera guy, gets his throat slashed. Gail Weathers, does she even get attacked, or is it just that she crashes the van?
She crashes and then she doesn't, right?
I think she gets attacked towards the end first one where she has the safety on the gun and he's like, it works a lot better if you take the safety
and they
off.
Hit her and stuff. Yeah, I don't know if she ever gets stabbed, but
she gets
scuffed up a bit.
Yeah.
She gets,
Randy gets shot, and then Stu and Billy stab each other, but that's all part of the plan.
That's still so crazy.
It's about 50-50.
And we can't leave out Principal Henry Winkler.
Right. Yes. So maybe even it's more men getting
what a treat.
Attacked.
What a treat. Fun cameo.
I know. He's in and out.
He was Fonz, and now he's the principal. So clever.
Then about 10 years later, he pops up in Holes. And you're like, what a gift.
Dad.
He's great in Holes.
Is Stanley Yelnats the third or something?
He plays Shia LaBeouf's dad. Yeah. So good. Anyways.
But I would say, even though there is more gender parity of people getting attacked in Scream, I would say, as far as on-screen violence, the attacks on women are more extended. They are more brutal. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, even what you were just describing, like, yes, David Arquette gets a knife to the back, but that's not as bad as being squeezed, garage door.
I mean, and then the whole opening scene is Drew Barrymore's character for a good 5 minutes is being verbally harassed, chased, stabbed, dragged across the ground. And then all we see of the boyfriend is that he's tied up briefly, and then it cuts to the aftermath of him being gutted. Yeah. So it's way more brutal when it comes to violence against women.
And I bet if we're clocking how long, like you're saying, those scenes are way longer.
Mm-hmm. And it might be worth noting that in that opening scene where we see the boyfriend tied up and kind of like used as sort of leverage, or like usually it's a woman tied up in an action movie or a superhero movie.
This time we got Steve.
But
what's the line that Drew Barrymore says? He's like, he's a football player and he's gonna kick your ass.
He's big and he's gonna kick your ass.
He's like, oh yeah. Yeah, that first scene, I mean, there's so much to unpack in that first scene alone, where it's one of those movies where, you know, because it does come down to the last girl still, essentially, and Sydney's, you know, the last girl who emerges triumphant, whatever. That trope, which kind of like our guest April Wolf was saying on the Halloween episode, there's a lot of different ways to look at the last girl trope. Mm-hmm. But that is upheld in this movie. Mm-hmm. But in the first scene, there were moments in this movie where it was hard for me to figure out, I don't know, like how the writing felt about some of its female characters that weren't Sydney. Because a lot of them come off as a little dumb, a little flaky.
Shrill, I do think there's some, I don't know if Williamson like extends this to all his female characters, but I think there is some fun or interesting, like setting up expectations that you would come to expect from having watched a lot of horror movies, that he kind of undercuts. Like, Gale Weathers is 100% set up as like as a victim. Like, she's like fucking with our main character. She's just like, she kind of played as this like snoopy like bitch who's just like getting in the way, and like you kind of like 100% expect her to get it. And and I would say this is a movie where I might say this is, actually has two final girls, because I think Gale kind of fits that, at least with her character. I don't know if I'd say that's the same for like Tatum, but like for her, like they're building up these expectations so they can kind of like undercut them,
subvert them.
The Gale character is, I mean, Gale and Sydney are both extremely smart and capable, and I mean, the movie doesn't do, like you're saying, Jen, the movie doesn't do that much to undercut their abilities. Even when they're wrong, it's not being positioned that they're stupid. It's just there's a lot going on, and there's a stabby plan that no one could have guessed. But there are, like, Casey and Tatum are a little bit trickier in that way, which is, you know, I'm not even saying every woman that appears on screen in every movie has to be really smart. That is unrealistic and at some point gets boring. But that first scene is so long, and the like, phone, over-the-phone coercion, which, like, was making me squirm a little bit of, like, don't tell him you're home alone. What are you?
Yeah.
And then telling a street, you're like, oh, I'm making popcorn. I'm going to watch a movie. It's like, what are you doing? And they're, what I could relate with in that scene is confusing Freddy, Jason, and Michael Myers, because I would have died there too. Imagine just like failing a BuzzFeed quiz and then being murdered.
Movie trivia is like the one thing that I am good at in my entire life. So I would have been like, boom, 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 boom.
Don't take that bad.
Yeah. I would fail. Although we did great at Gilmore Girls trivia.
Yeah. We won. Anyway.
Anyways, quick brag.
Yeah. I said it. It's a worthy brag.
Another thing if you're comparing Halloween and Scream, for example, in Halloween, there are a lot of women in the cast, but they weren't really driving the narrative. They were basically just kind of reacting to what the killer was doing, and their main goal was survival, essentially, and only one of them gets to achieve that goal, which is Laurie Strode. In Scream, however, there's a few elements that are introduced that allow female characters to be more active. One, the identity of the killer is a mystery, unlike Halloween, where like we know right off the bat that it's Michael Myers and there's no like ambiguity there.
Yeah.
So in Scream, the women are trying to figure out who the killer is, mostly Gail, because mm-hmm. she's trying to like crack the, get the scoop. But then also because Sydney keeps being attacked and called and harassed by the killer, and she's like, "What? Who is this? I want to know."
And that Gail has alternative theories of, like, she's really thought about, she's positioned, like you're saying, Jonah, as like kind of a flighty local reporter, but she's done some investigation and is good at her job and seems to be getting closer than, unfortunately, our girl Sydney keeps kind of fumbling it.
until after she has sex with, and then the clues click after she's had sex.
She's the killer.
Which is a really interesting subversion to the tropes of slasher movies, because as soon as she, rather than, getting murdered, which is what usually happens as soon as a girl has sex in a horror movie, things fall into place for her.
It's an interesting, that was a subversion where when that happened, I was like, huh.
Yeah, sometimes it just feels like they're like subversions without actually thinking, like, what is the implication of this? It's just like subverting it because I'm clever and I can do that math of like, well, if this usually happens, then this should happen. But it's like, what are we actually saying with this? As opposed to like just doing it because I'm a clever screenwriter.
Because I was like, is the implication of that like, okay, so now to be able to solve crimes, you better be fucking. Like there's a lot of different ways. I was like, I don't know. Like it was an interesting subversion, and it sounds like at this point that is not something that would normally happen in a horror movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was like, what exactly was Williamson trying to say with that one?
Right.
And I was on this theme, I'm sorry if I'm jumping to end too soon, but I think, okay, so like seeing this in theaters in like 96, the moment that just like, I've rarely been in another theater where like an audience went this crazy was when she's kind of like turned the tables on, when Sydney's turned the tables on the killer and she has that voice box and she's like terrorizing them.
Yeah.
That is so satisfying and so gratifying. Like the audience erupted when she started calling them. And it's like, at that point, she's not just like the active protagonist. She is like, I don't know.
Giving
she's
them empowered. A taste of their own medicine.
It's so good. Yeah.
Because you so rarely see that. Because, again, if we're comparing it to Halloween, Laurie Strode just kind of gets away by sheer luck.
At best, they're like defending themselves and fighting for their lives. They're not like actively going after the people who've like terrorized them the whole movie.
They're rarely like cunning. Yeah. And,
at least until that point. I think we've seen that a little more. Mm-hmm. But Scream was kind of a little bit of a invader.
And cathartic.
It's cathartic. Cool. Yes.
And in Halloween, Dr. Loomis has to come in and kind of save the day by shooting Michael Myers, whereas in this movie, in Scream, Sydney kills one of the bad guys, and then Gail kills the other one. So it's two women triumphing.
Also, two last girls. Yeah.
Another like audience going nuts moment when she was like, safety's off that time, asshole.
Yeah.
And like, our audience erupts.
Woo!
Yeah. It's a good audience. It's a good audience movie. Yes. Like, you got to see it with a crowd.
I kind of want, I'm sure there's public screenings of it around this time of year. I kind of want to go.
Want to see this
in a group. That'd
there's one
so
at the Arclight this Saturday.
No way!
Yeah.
Oh.
I might go.
Okay. Maybe we should all.
Yeah. Well, we got to take another quick break. So let's take a break and figure out the plans for that. And then we'll come right back.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X. Celebrating Pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women. Creating sustainable size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection. Obsessively fit tested for all day comfort in sizes 3 extra small through 6X. Visit TomboyX.com.
I'm going out with the girls this weekend. Nails done. Outfit stunner. And my skin? I know it's going to be glowing because I glammed up my shower routine with new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash. It smells so luxurious and deeply moisturizes with its super rich, creamy lather that's bursting with vitamin B3 complex. So my skin glows and my confidence grows. Try new Olay Indulgent Moisture Body Wash for glowing skin in just 14 days.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but, like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Going back quickly to, like, the movie calling attention to tropes, but maybe not necessarily fully understanding the implications of what they're saying and kind of, like, not taking it far enough in terms of commentary.
Yeah.
For example, toward the end, whenever, like, Randy and the gang are watching Halloween at Stu's house.
JK. JK and his friends.
Yeah. He's kind of, you know, going through the rules and the tropes, and he's saying, he's like, Jamie Lee was always the virgin in horror movies. That's why she always outsmarted the killer in the big chase scene at the end. There's certain rules that one must abide by to successfully survive a horror movie. For instance, number one, you can never have sex. Sex equals death. Number two, you can't drink or do drugs. Number three, God, never say, I'll be right back. Yeah, he's like, he's monologuing out in this scene.
This is where there were a few parts of this movie where I'm like, okay, like, we're laying it on a bit thick,
yeah.
Kevin.
So he's calling attention to these tropes, but I would argue that there's not a whole lot of active commentary being made.
Well, I mean, kind of like what we were just talking about, it's like the implication that's like, no, women who have had sex before can escape alive.
Yeah.
And can have agency. I don't know. I mean, I guess I was just thinking about myself in high school. I'm like, well, where does that leave all the virgins? That used to be the only thing we had was that we could live. And now what we got to work with? We got nothing.
Yeah, there's, I mean, in terms of, I think this movie came out at a time where starting to acknowledge media tropes in text is becoming trendy, but not necessarily doing much about it, because this is like, you know, third wave feminism time. This is squarely in the, like, girl power. But as we see in this not very diverse movie in terms of race or, once again, women's body types, it's like, okay, there is some level of catharsis and liberation for women, but only a very specific type of woman.
Young, conventionally attractive, white, straight women.
Exactly. And that, I mean, I think that that shows up in almost every movie of this era of, you also can be a murderer if you look hot and play by the rules. Mm-hmm. Like, there, it's progressive for its time, but certainly not.
Yeah. And it's a little, maybe a little disappointing coming from Wes Craven, because he had a string of movies before that that are a little more, like, progressive. The People Under the Stairs, I think, is one of, like, just like.
Never seen that. I'm not familiar.
I mean, I'm going to say all this with a grain of salt because I haven't watched any of these movies in, like, years, but, you know, People Under the Stairs is a horror movie about, like, gentrification that puts a young black kid at the center of the movie. And it's so good and so freaky. And, like, and he actually, I think he did a little more interesting stuff with just the idea of, like, these meta narratives a couple years before with New Nightmare. But this was kind of all that stuff. I feel like Scream was kind of, like, dealing with the same stuff as New Nightmare. I don't want to say dumbed down, but, like, you know, for a mass audience.
A broader audience.
For a broader audience. Mm-hmm.
Right. And then the screenwriter, Kevin Williamson, I mean, kind of builds his career on, and I love a lot of his work. Yeah. Means a lot to me.
What else has he done?
So he is the force behind Dawson's Creek. Ever heard of it? The Vampire Diaries, Screams 1, 2, and 4. I Know What You Did Last Summer.
The Faculty. I think might be the one movie from this wave of late 90s horror that I actually like more than Scream.
Really?
Yeah, I love The Faculty.
Well, I've never seen The Faculty.
I don't think I was in it.
It is Elijah Wood.
Ooh, Josh Hartnett.
Josh Hartnett, yes.
B.B. Newirth is in it.
That's right.
Frasier,
John Stewart is a teacher in it.
Okay. But there is this through line, even with like this specific relatively progressive writer's work, where in a lot of these, and I'm pulling mainly from Dawson's Creek and early Vampire Diaries, where there's a lot of well-written female characters that are making active choices. They're complicated. They have backstories. But again, like in Scream, it's almost across all the work we just mentioned, a very specific type of woman.
Yeah,
for sure.
That this agency is available to.
Scream 2 comments on the lack of diversity in horror movies to some extent.
Ooh.
And that movie seems to have made like a more conscious effort in terms of casting to cast more people of color in the movie. But all of those characters are in supporting roles. None of them are really in the main cast. And then that effort to be more inclusive in the sequels after that, in Scream 3 and 4, just doesn't happen again.
I mean, as far as I remember, Scream 2 just kind of opens with like the opening murder is
it's Jada Pinkett Smith.
Yes. Yeah. And her boyfriend, who I forget who plays her boyfriend.
Yeah, so do I.
At a screening of Stab, which is the fake franchise within the Scream universe that the get it. But like it does very much feel like okay, we've paid lip service to this idea. We're acknowledging it. Now let us get on it and make the real movie.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it feels like certainly more could have been done to acknowledge the lack of diversity in horror movies, certainly in the first Scream, because that does not happen at all.
Right.
And then even when Scream 2, when it does make an attempt, it kind of just isn't really enough.
Especially if you're doing meta commentary about the horror genre. I mean, there is like such a kind of like going back as far as like Night of the Living Dead, a rich history of using horror as a template to talk about race, that it almost feels negligent, like willfully negligent on the side of the people who are making this meta horror film, not to like bring that into the conversation.
Yeah.
Like even like going back as far as like the Twilight Zone, you know.
Yeah.
Like horror has always been used as kind of a platform to talk about like more progressive things, because like people like Rod Serling always said you could like tolerate talking about this stuff when you bring spooky stuff into the mix.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's frustrating. Yeah, this whole, a lot of, like, Clinton-era movies, for whatever reason, they are willing to acknowledge the problem, but then also take little to no action to solve it, where it's like, okay, thank you for bringing it to our attention that you're aware there's a lack of diversity, and then straight up, like, show white people for 3 hours. It's just bizarre. Yeah, this falls squarely in that span of years where that's happening.
Yeah.
I think the first movie on this podcast that we really started to unpack the kind of like semi-empty girl power message of the 90s is Spice World.
Oh, yeah.
Ironically.
You did that with Amanda Meadows, right?
Amanda
Meadows. Uh-huh. Hi, Amanda. I bet you're listening to this.
She's our biggest fan.
Yeah.
She's the best.
Right, because that had just so much kind of like empty, quote unquote, feminism, where it's like, you go, girl, girl power, but it was like corporate feminism.
Yeah.
And they still, you know, subscribe to a lot of the tropes that are regressive toward women. And
it became a buzz. It became like, a marketing strategy. It's like,
It's
like girl power, buy a pink Polaroid camera.
Yeah.
And I think to some extent that is happening now too. And it's like, I try to be really like mindful of that when I'm, you know, just it's a weekend. I'm strolling through, let's say, the Glendale Galleria, my closest mall.
Mine too.
I love the Glendale Galleria.
And it's just a quick couple steps to the, and then you're at the Americana.
And you're just at another great mall.
Two malls.
Love the mall. I love shopping. I got
Yes.
I got these great French fries at the Americana the other day. Anyways, but walking through, like, you know, it's because it is such a precarious, strange moment in time where we care about women's issues again, but do we, kind of thing. I think that's reflected in marketing so much. We're like, even walking through my favorite mall the other day, my favorite indoor mall across the street from my favorite outdoor mall.
Perfect. Perfectly situated.
We love it. There's Apple stores at both. Anyways, I want to go to the mall. There is like a concentrated effort right now to play into that, especially, and where I find it especially sinister is with empty messages about like body acceptance. There's this, I'm thinking of a campaign that Lush is doing right now to sell soap. Mm-hmm. And it's like, hey, any body type can use our soap. And you're like, yeah, no shit, it's soap.
Right.
Yeah.
And then it's like, me too, the soap. And you're like, fuck your me too. Yeah. Like,
But then it's like you go across the mall to like Forever 21, where they're not selling, like, those are the stores that like won't sell clothes into like the extra large sizes because they don't want like bigger women in so it's like
in their clothes
and you know, that's something I deal with a lot, but there's a lot of times where this girl power messaging that's happening now feels a little shallow because you don't see it extended to
exclusionary still.
Yes.
Right. And just like capitalizing on a moment while doing nothing to actually support it. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm just like,
yeah.
But everyone should check out the Glendale Galleria. Great food court.
And then there's a little side food court if you go up there. Yeah. Guys, take a weekend. Just one day at the Galleria, one day at the Americana. Just have a full weekend.
Our friend calls it, what does Jared call it? Jared calls it like the Paris of California.
Yeah.
It's just, the Americana is, hey, can't afford to go to Paris? Check out the Americana. There's a water fountain.
Yes.
And a movie theater.
And it's already synced up to songs from the Polar Express. Christmas starts early at the Americana.
Oh, there you go. Way out of their way.
Yeah.
God. When I was at the Americana, sorry, one more thing about the Americana. I was getting my computer fixed on a Monday, so I was like, oh, it's a quiet time at the Americana. There was an old couple watching the water fountain display and like crying.
Aww.
They thought it was like 11 in the morning. I was like, guys, what are we doing here? But they were so moved, were they, by the Americana water display that they were both crying and holding hands.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
I know. Well, I just was like, oh, God.
Yeah. Well, not to, you know, derail this Glendale Galleria conversation, but kind of, well, tying it back to what we had been talking about in terms of like the exclusionary, you know, soap is for every body type. And it's like, duh. Yeah. There is a moment where Courtney Cox fat shames her camera guy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Other than that, I would say there's not as much actively problematic stuff that happens in this movie.
It's a lot of omission.
It's omission. And then compare this to the Scream parody of Scary Movie that, like I said, relies entirely on problematic jokes. So,
also, this movie was supposed to be called Scary Movie.
Yes.
Crazy. Also, we would be remiss not to say, you know, it is a Weinstein joint. So.
Yes, it certainly is. And should we, I don't know how much it's worth talking about to bring up Rose McGowan, who plays Tatum.
Right.
But, you know, she's been very outspoken about the Me Too movement. But she also, you know, says some problematic things that are fairly turfy at times.
I think it's important to remember there is no perfect advocate for a movement. And if you're putting all your chips behind one specific advocate, probably not a smart thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Put your chips behind the movement, not a specific person.
Yep.
But it is unfortunate. I mean, there, and if I'm recalling correctly, I did a little bit of a light goog on the subject. And it appears that the issues with Weinstein and McGowan happened after Scream.
Oh, okay.
In 97.
Interesting.
Just a thing.
I might be wrong, but I think that just was those wave of like Dimension and Miramax films that they weren't actively involved with. It's just like their names were on everything. Although I do know it was them who decided to change the name from Scary Movie to Scream. That's the only active participation I know they had in the movie.
Got it.
I mean, they still got money for it, so I'm not happy. But
yeah. Also a weird, like weird Hollywood Reporter story came out as the Me Too movement was like starting this time last year. And Skeet Ulrich, for some reason, took it upon himself to be like, yeah, I also knew Harvey Weinstein was bad. And I'm like, Skeet, can you sit down for like a second?
Don't they need you on set over at Riverdale?
Yeah, like, don't you need to play some fedora asshole?
Yeah. Don't you need to be brooding in a jail cell somewhere? A fake jail cell, not a real. I'm not advocating sending Skeet Ulrich to real jail. Not yet.
Yeah. Show us the receipts and we'll send Skeet to jail.
Yes.
Skeet. Does anyone have any final thoughts about Scream?
I just really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
There's blind spots, mostly by omission. But I really liked it.
I love this movie when it came out. It was a lot of fun to revisit it. The one moment I've always loved in the movie is when everyone at the party finds out the principal's been murdered and they're like, fuck yeah. And then they like take off. I'm like, what is wrong with these kids?
These kids' reaction to finding out people close to them
are like, they're so stoked.
They're heartless.
I really want to see the moment where they get to the like the football field to see like Principal Henry Winkler like strung up and they just like the gravity of what they're actually doing hits them and they're like,
right, and they're
oh
like,
my god, a person is dead. Yeah. I thought this was just fun, but a principal is dead. I mean, I didn't get along with him, but
but he doesn't deserve to die.
Yeah.
Jamie, you mentioned this a bit on the Halloween episode, where in that movie and in this movie as well, it's clear that the people who are displaying toxic masculinity and, you know, other negative qualities, it's clear that they are the bad guys, because often we find in movies where, you know, the hero is also ripe with toxic masculinity, but we're still
Indiana Jones raped a
15-year-old
at best.
But because in different moments of this movie we see like Billy emotionally manipulating his girlfriend by being like, oh, you're still upset about your dead mom, you fucking loser. Why don't you just have sex with me already, God? And it's like, oh, okay, so you're, you know, abusive and gaslighting. And then he ends up being the bad guy. So,
oh, also, that was one last thing I wanted to say about Sydney is that, like, kickstarting stuff with the brutal murder of a woman, and I think they say rape as well. This issue is
Of Sydney's mom.
That's in the report.
Yes, in the report. Right. Yes.
That, I mean, both seems like a reference to Halloween and just like, oh boy, we're killing a woman to start the story. But you do see Sydney dealing with that trauma in a way that at least seems for this universe to be relatively honest. Mm-hmm. And it's not the sort of story where it's like, oh yeah, we're just throwing this in there to get the story started. And it has no actual narrative impact on our main character. So I was happy to see that.
And I'd also, I mean, in regards to actually both of what you're saying, especially like the display of understanding and display of toxic masculinity, I think a lot of that might have to do with the fact that like Williamson is a like queer writer. So he's not writing from the inside. He's kind of writing from the outside a little bit when he's dealing with character. And I think maybe he can see them with a little less like hero worship than like, say, a, you know, someone who might see themselves in Billy Loomis would.
Right.
Yeah.
And I would say overall, in terms of like the character development of the, you know, main female characters we get to know, which is mostly Sydney and Gail Weathers, we don't know a whole ton about them outside of how they relate to this specific story. It's not like, you know, we're like, oh, and Sydney loves chemistry and, you know, stuff like that. But, you know, there's only so much you can accomplish.
She's in the debate club.
Right. But it didn't super bother me in this movie because, you know, this movie has an agenda. And
also, it's not like we know that much more about the male characters either. There's not like a massive imbalance. Like, it's just the story doesn't tell you much about the teenagers outside of their sex lives.
And they
across genders.
And they all love horror movies. They all love horror movies.
Insanely specific knowledge.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, I like this movie.
Yeah, it's
God
fun,
damn it.
I want you to see the other three. Let's watch them together.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Wow.
Hey, does this movie pass the Bechdel test?
It does.
Big time.
Uh-huh.
It
does.
Yeah, quite a few times between quite a few different combinations of characters. It passes between Sid and Tatum early on. Men get mentioned in this conversation, but there are two line exchanges that pass whenever Sid's like, hey, what's going on at our school? And she's like, oh, some teens were killed that we know. There is a scene between Sydney and Gail where the whole thing passes as far as I could tell. Oh, and I think Tatum is there too, where like she's like, get away from her. Don't ask questions. This is none of your damn business. Blah, yeah. blah, blah. Yeah, so there's quite a few scenes where the movie passes the Bechdel test.
Mm-hmm. It was good. Impressively so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we've talked about this before of the, you know, few horror movies we've covered that so far it seems like all of them pass. And it's because horror movies have to be populated by many women so that they can get murdered. Yeah. But before they get murdered, they talk to each other.
What a catch 22.
And they usually have to talk because of what's happened in the movie. They probably have to talk about something besides a man. They right. have to yeah. talk about.
Hey, did you hear about our friend, Sally, getting yes. murdered?
She got yeah. snuffed. Yeah,
my guess is all the Saw movies pass the Bechdel test. Ooh. They all, like,
which is just another proof of the flawed metric.
Yeah, so what are we going to do about these traps?
Yeah.
There's so many traps here.
A lot of knives in this room, yeah. Christy.
Christy.
Agree.
Don't put your hand in that needle pile, Christy.
Oops, my bee. Passes.
So let's rate the movie on our nipple scale,
all right.
where we rate it 0 to 5 nipples based on its portrayal and representation of women. I'm going to give this one, I would say, a 3, I suppose.
I was going to go for 3.
Yeah, because we see the female characters being a bit more active and more motivated than they are in typical slasher movies. We don't see like the gratuitous nudity that we often see. While it does still align with some of the tropes, it also kind of redefines some of the tropes and it subverts some of them. So, you know, the whole final girl has to be innocent virgin type is kind of thrown out the window with this. They save themselves at the end. There is parity between the number of men versus women who get attacked. Right. So I think it handles things better than, you know, the 70s and 80s slasher flicks that audiences had gotten accustomed to up until, you know, the release of Scream. But as we also pointed out, there is no diversity in terms of race, in terms of identity and sexuality and body type and all of that stuff. So it's still the story of young, hot, white women, which a character like Gail Weathers continues to help sensationalize. And
right, yeah.
Yeah, so it doesn't handle everything the best that it could, but it's a step certainly in a better direction for slasher movies. So yeah, 3 nipples, and I'm going to give 1 to Sydney, I'm going to give 1 to Gail, and I'm going to throw 1 to our pal Lillard.
Lillard! Oh boy, I'm going to go for 3 as well. We already discussed kind of, it's mostly progress on a surface level in that it's a hetero white movie. Inside of the world, women have more agency than most popular horror movies up till this point. And I'm sure seeing this movie in theaters was cathartic for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And it's just interesting to see in a horror movie, 2 characters, Gail and Sydney, who don't just survive. They survive and they
thrive.
And they like come together. Like, yeah. I don't know if like there's a lot going on, like theme wise, there's a lot going on in Scream. But one of the light themes I took out of it is about how kind of media and society like work to like keep women at odds with each other. Like, because like the whole movie, they're at odds with each other. And at the end, when she's like, how about this story? Reporter like killed 2 asshole teenagers, murderers. And Sydney's like, I like that story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's like we always say, people try to keep women fighting because if we talk to each other, then the scam is exposed.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, there's most of this movie is like terrific, and it's definitely paved the way for even more progressive work to be made.
Mm-hmm.
And a bunch of weird, not great work. So,
such as Scary Movie and that whole franchise.
The Cost of Success.
Yeah.
Anyways, giving it three nippies. Of course, I'm going to toss this one to Lillard, give him a full set. Where I'm going to kick one over to Casey, because Drew Barrymore just, she belts it. And I'm going to give my last one to Gail. Yeah.
Great.
I might, just for, like, nostalgia and being there factor, like, I might bump it up to four.
Oh, sure.
Because I totally agree with everything you guys are saying. But I don't know. There was just being there for that movie at the time it was released, like, in a giant, crowded audience was, like, it did feel like something special. And it did feel like we were seeing something, like, you know, progressive and cool and new. And, like, I'll never, like, forget that experience of seeing, of, like, you know, feeling that catharsis the first time I saw it in a theater. And, you know, this is just me, I feel like, looking back on it with, like, remembering, like, kind of what horror was before that and kind of what Scream took it to. But I can't help it. Like, it is a very special movie to me for that.
Sure,
and
don't
fight it. I'm gonna give it one extra nipple for that reason.
Woo.
Yeah.
And who would you like to give your nipples to?
Oh, I'm gonna give, obviously, Gail. Obviously, Sydney. I'm gonna, like, also throw one to Tatum just for that kick-ass move where she, like, slams the freezer door in Ghost Face's face. My last nipple goes to, can I give it to Sydney Gale team up at the end?
Because
I fucking love that.
Mutual nip.
Yeah, they each get one extra half nip.
Well, better luck next time, Jamie Kennedy.
Yeah.
No nips for you this time.
No. Nope.
Man, he's only in so many movies.
Yeah.
So we gotta
he's
be
in
great.
Scream 2, so yeah. we gotta watch it.
Yeah. Next year.
Or maybe when you get to Son of Mask.
Oh. There's that's like 20 years from now when we're really scraping for movies. Like, all right, here's the Son of Mask episode. Oh, yikes.
Oh, so just wait 20 years, Jamie.
Yeah.
And then...
and hopefully, you know, you'll be alive and thriving.
Yeah.
And,
doing even more experiments.
By that point, the two of us will be married, and it'll be the Jamie Kennedy, Jamie Kennedy experiment.
Amazing.
Our awesome show. Anyways.
Well, Joan, thank you so much for being
thank
here.
Thank you for having me. This was a lot of fun.
It's a blast.
Yeah, I love going back to 96.
Yay.
Living my high school years.
Oh, awesome. Where can people find you online? What would you like to plug?
You can find me on Twitter or Instagram as Joan Haley Ford. Other than that, I'm at UCB pretty frequently. And watch out for Yabba Dabba Dinosaurs and Thundercats Roar.
And don't forget to be on the lookout also. Be alert and aware for Paula Blart.
Paula Blart. Caitlin and I are going to hit we're going to go to a Starbucks right now and start taking story notes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Maybe you could set it at the Americana.
Twist is it's an outdoor mall.
Yeah. Worlds colliding.
Oh, there's so much. There's so many more threads. It's outside. Yeah. It could rain.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. What's Paula Blart going to do in a snowstorm?
Oh, God. Yeah. We're going to need a high budget. Yeah. We're going to have to make that snow real.
It could be maybe it's a geostorm crossover where there's some terrorist is causing a snowstorm in Southern California.
Oh, I love this.
Amazing.
Yeah. We're well on our way.
So good. Okay.
Draft one complete.
Hey, for great ideas like that, check us out on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook at BechtelCast. You can rate and review us on iTunes. You can go to our merch store, teepublic.com/TheBechtelCast. We've got all kinds of goodies, and you've got a few more days to get our Halloween Beetlejuice merch.
Yeah, it's only on sale this month, our feminist icon Beetlejuice fun ironic tea reference to last year's episode. And, you know, are you on team wet scabs or are you on team dry scabs? A likely failing t-shirt design will only be on sale for a few more days.
Also, quick plug about our East Coast tour that we're going to be doing in early November. Starting on November 3rd, we're going to be in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. November 4th, we're going to be in Washington, D.C. And November 5th, we're going to be in New York City as a part of the New York Comedy Festival. For more details about the movies we're covering, our guests, the venues we'll be at, and how to get tickets, go to BechtelCast.com and go to our live appearances tab, and all the information will be there. You can also check our Twitter and Facebook. We'll be posting the links there. So if you live in or near any of those cities, we hope to see you there for our live shows. And finally, we've got a Patreon, aka Matreon, that gets you 2 bonus episodes every single month, and it's only $5 a month. So subscribe to that by going to patreon.com/BechdelCast. And otherwise, you scream, I scream, we all scream for Scream.
Scream franchise.
Yeah. Okay, bye.
All right, love you, bye.
Bye.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X, celebrating pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women, creating sustainable size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection, obsessively fit tested for all day comfort in sizes 3 extra small through 6X. Visit TomboyX.com.
This is Raquel Willis from Queer Chronicles. Right now, there are close to 500 anti-LGBTQ plus bills in state legislatures across the country. Lambda Legal is leading the charge against these hateful bills that target mostly trans and non-binary people. You can fight discrimination and help write the next chapter of Lambda Legal history. To learn more about their open cases and to donate, visit lambdalegal.org. That's lambdalegal.org.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.